The shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School in the United States have shocked the world and left a small town in Connecticut in mourning. It's not the first time mass shootings in America have been in the headlines, but the global reaction could be attributed to the deaths of 20 children. There are an estimated 300 million guns in America, and the recent massacre has reignited the debate on gun control. So is this tragedy a product of our time? I would have thought so, but unfortunately it seems not. My next guest has written a book on a similar event that happened back in 1927, and it's a story probably, like me, you're unaware of. In 1927, a schoolhouse in a small town of Massachusetts was blown up, killing 38 children and 6 adults. Shortly afterwards, a farmer drove his pickup to the scene and detonated another bomb, killing himself and a superintendent. So were there any lessons to be learnt from this event so long ago? Joining us now is Arnie Bernstein, author of Bath Massacre, America's First School Bombing. Good morning, Arnie.
Good morning.
Look, I'd never heard of this bombing. Do many Americans know about it?
No, not at all. I did not know of it, in fact, until I sort of stumbled on the story on the internet. If I could make a correction, it was in Michigan, not in Massachusetts.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. It's really sort of a forgotten, lost story in American history. 3 days after it happened, Charles Lindbergh took off for Paris, and the story was literally forgotten from the newspapers as everybody wanted to get on, you know, bored with Lindbergh, and Lindbergh was everywhere in the newspapers.
Well, I suppose, too, Arnie, that it was such an outrageous and singular crime at the time that no one could imagine that it would become something that would be more commonplace.
Yeah, it was unprecedented. What happened was this farmer, his name was Andrew Kehoe. He was in his 50s, was a trustee at the school, no children. And he had no children, but he was a trustee at the school. He and the superintendent, a man named Emery Hike, were in constant conflict with one another. And I've sat in on a few school board meetings myself, and school board meetings myself, and that's not unusual. But he took it another step. His mind was clearly unsound. He was a go-to guy in town for dynamite. If any of your listeners are farmers, things like that, there's a thing known as stump blasting. If you have a stump or a boulder in the middle of your field, you just blow it up. It would kill your horse if you tried to pull it out. So he was the go-to guy for dynamite. It was no question that he had dynamite. And he was also a master electrician, so he was allowed free rein at the school to do repairs. What they think happened was that over a course of several months, he planted dynamite and timers within the school of the basement and set it to go off on the morning of May 18th, 1927.
Well, I mean, it's difficult to understand the psychology here, but just a deeply troubled man, a one-off.
Yeah, it was. It fits classic psychopathic behavior, in that there is no why. The story that sort of mythologized through history is that he was upset about his taxes. He had stopped paying his mortgage for many years, and he was constantly grumbling that the taxes of the school were ruining him. But people don't blow up a school full of children because they're upset about their taxes. He did it because his mind was simply unsound. And it's frustrating, and it's really hard to accept, but there really is no why to this. And I think that's the same story in Newton. There is no real why. You can come up with, you know, he did it because of this or that, but it doesn't make sense.
Well, I was going to ask, do you see any similarities between the two events at all?
Very much, very much. What happened was Kehoe's wife was actually, his farm burned to the ground. He had set it to go off at the same time as the school through timers. As I say, he was a master electrician. They found the remains of his wife on the farm the next day, along with a sign, by the way, that said, "Killers are made, not born." That was his only word back to the land of the living. But he, as with this young man's mother, who was found, dead, the going down, the mass killing, and then the suicide. And what really haunts me about this is the story of Vicki DeSoto. She was the teacher who stood and took the bullets for her students. There was a teacher at Bath. What happened was, one wing of the school blew up. There were 600 pounds of explosives. Only about 100 went off, and the school collapsed. They thought at first a boiler had blown up. They did not know until Keel blew himself up in front of the school what had really happened. But in any event, they found a young teacher. Her name was Hazel Weatherby. She taught the second grade. She was barely alive, sticking out of the rubble, almost like a wilted flower, almost. She had a child in each arm. Both children were dead. And she handed them over to the rescuers, and then she gave in to death herself. And I thought a lot about her when I heard the story of Vicky DeSoto. It was so similar.
Well, indeed it is. Do you think there's... I mean, it doesn't make it any easier to anticipate or predict those who may be inclined to behave in that sort of way as a guide to assisting us in the future, does there?
No. In fact, I was interviewed by somebody who was putting together a report for the United States Department of Homeland Security. And the one thing I emphasized, and, you know, I've been continuing to emphasize over the years, is that we can't predict these things, and you can't stop these things, you know, any more than you can, you know, stop a glacier from forming. They are just going to happen. It happened in Columbine. It actually happened right near where I live at Northern Illinois University. I'm in Chicago. And there was a man walked into a classroom and started firing away. I also teach in Chicago, and one of my students lost two friends that day. And there's just no stopping it. It's a frustrating, as I say, it's frustrating. It's sad. You know, you try to wrap your mind around it, and you can't. But it will happen as long as, you know, as long as people have the will, it will happen.
Yes, and as long as they have the means too, Arnie. That's not to be forgotten.
Of course. Of course. I mean, Kehoe had the dynamite, and, you know, I mean, certainly the gun control laws in America, you know, there's quite the debate going on now. It's, you know, I'm sure you've all been hearing about, you know, who can get guns, how are guns distributed, how people can buy guns. It's.
I was going to ask, Arnie, just finally, do you think the argument for more control is the argument in ascendancy at the moment?
Oh yes, it's quite a debate here in the country. I think the tide is finally starting to turn to more regulation on guns. I don't know if you heard of the incident the other day. It was Christmas Day, actually, where a fire broke out at a house in upstate New York. Four firemen, volunteer firemen, rushed to the scene. Two of them were shot dead by a guy inside who had left a note saying he was born to kill. And he committed suicide, and they found the remains of what they think were his sister inside the house as well. He had easy access to guns. I think this is all changing the debate in the United States, and I certainly hope it is.
Yeah. Well, I think the extraordinary thing about the United States, Arnie, is that given the number of or the style of weaponry available to so many people, why incidents like these aren't more frequent.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's an argument you often hear. I live in Chicago, and there's a lot of gang issues, and a lot of these kids have access to these kinds of guns. And we hear about this thing far too often, far too often.
Yeah. Well, Arnie, look, thank you for taking the trouble to join us this morning. I wish you all the best, and would encourage anyone to if they can, get a hand on Arnie's book, Massacre, America's First School Bombing. We've been joined by Arnie Bernstein.